Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, World Bank economist William Maloney tells us why developing countries would do well to take advantage of recent innovations and tap into the massive stock of global know-how.
We should see developing country firms being extremely aggressive at adopting these technologies and investing in R&D, and we should see governments thinking basically about nothing else. And we see neither.
We hear a lot about how technology is reshaping economies around the world, but a recent book published by the World Bank suggests developing countries are missing out on a huge opportunity. Maloney says the potential returns on investment into research and development by developing countries are astounding and could dwarf international aid flows. Yet developing country firms and governments invest very little toward realizing this potential. William Maloney is chief economist for Equitable Growth, Finance and Institutions in the World Bank Group, and co-author of The Innovation Paradox. He was a guest lecturer at the IMF's Developing Economies Seminar Series. Describe to me the innovation paradox that you refer to in your research, you know, as compared to perhaps the productivity paradox that we've been hearing about.
All right. So these are different animals. The productivity paradox arises from the fact that we've had all these huge advances in telecommunications technology, information and telecommunications technology, and we see that everywhere except in the productivity numbers. So that's the productivity paradox. The innovation paradox is that the rates of return to investments in innovation of various different kinds appear to be extremely high, much higher for poor countries than for rich countries, yet we see a much smaller effort in these areas. So how do we get poor countries to adopt the technologies that now exist in the advanced countries, which can raise their productivity? And so it's not about inventing new things. Mm. It's about the ability of countries to identify ideas that could work, to bring them to their countries, to adapt them, and to generate growth with them.
And are they managing to do that?
No. This is exactly the paradox that we're talking about in the book. If you actually think that more or less half of growth is productivity growth, total factor productivity, and somewhere around half of that is within firm improvements in productivity, then we're talking enormous amounts of money, right, that dwarf foreign aid flows of any kind. And hence, we would think that countries would be narrowly focused on exactly the search for new technologies and increasing the productivity of the private sector. But by every measure that we look at, that's not the case.
So that generally the amount on average a country might put towards research and development, does it vary a lot between advanced economies and developing?
Hugely. Yeah. Your average rich country will spend somewhere around between 2% and 4% of GDP on research and development. Your poorest countries will spend close to nothing. So, for instance, in many Latin American countries, you'll find it's 0.1, 0.2% of GDP, whereas in Korea, for instance, it's somewhere between 3% and 4%. And you could say, okay, but that's higher order spending. That's including invention, which it does. It also includes adoption of technologies. But even if we look at other measures of technological adoption, for instance, purchasing of existing licenses to use technologies abroad, that also increases with GDP. So poor countries are spending very little on adopting existing technologies through that channel. And there's another dimension that we focus on, which is what we call managerial technologies. So you can think of management practices, adopting good management practices, as a kind of importing of best practice technologies from abroad, right? And you can say, well, what are we talking about here? Well, do you have a good set of accounts? Do you have a capacity or system set up to take a longer run view on where your firm should be? Do you have a staff that can help you get there? If you're actually thinking about doing any sort of innovation, do you have a human resources policy that will help you staff that plan? And in all of this, do you have established feedback loops to ensure that you're getting where you want to go? And you're very well-managed companies have all of those things. But we find most, again, that most poor countries have very weak managerial practices, and hence they don't have the capability to identify new technologies.
But what kind of rates of return are we talking about?
So in the advanced countries, let's say the U.S. and Spain, I think, are the countries for which we have the best estimates to date. And they're somewhere, you know, 30 to 45%.
Wow.
This is in, those are social rates of return, meaning it don't necessarily accrue to the person doing it. It's the society as a whole. If you believe these results, and I think we should, the United States should probably be investing twice what it does in R&D. The second part of this little puzzle, though, is that an influential paper several years ago showed that as you get further from the technological frontier within Europe, within the OECD.
What do you mean by the technological frontier?
So the countries that are most technologically advanced, let's say, as you get further and further from there, the potential for adopting new technologies and moving really quickly ahead gets higher and higher, right? So the returns to those investments and innovation in R&D also get higher and higher. And this we do see within the OECD, that Spain and those countries have higher rates of return than, say, the United States. Okay. If you extrapolate out of the sample to even Indonesia, Korea, these, the result, the rates get even higher. Okay. So we're in the hundreds, getting closer. And if you go on to Africa, it's like 300, 400%. And so the question is, assuming that the rates get even further higher as you get further from the frontier, we should see developing country firms being extremely aggressive at adopting these technologies and investing in R&D. And we should see governments thinking basically about nothing else and just saying, okay, how am I going to get my firms to do this? Or how can I help do that? And we see neither.
Wow. So like 400% return. Why do you think there is such little investment toward research and development?
Right. So a lot of it is, again, the absence of these complementary factors, such as having a qualified workforce, having access to credit markets that would allow you to buy physical capital, access to foreign markets because your trade regime is distorted, a competitive regime, for instance, where state-owned enterprises are absorbing all the oxygen from your entrepreneurial sector. Any number of things like that will make it so that an investment in research and development by a firm will not get the rate of return that you would think it should get, given how far away it is from the technological frontier.
But so what you're describing are problems that developing countries have.
Absolutely.
And have been having for a long time.
No.
So but what do you think? Do you think it's realistic to think that they can build a foundation upon which they can start investing in R&D?
So the first thing to do is acknowledge that the innovation agenda that we have in the advanced countries is much more narrow than the innovation agenda that we face in developing countries. If you're Sweden, you can afford to say, okay, what is the problem with my innovation system? And the standard problem there is that if Bruce has a really good idea and he spends a lot of money generating this idea, he can't prevent me from stealing that idea. Right? So that means a whole bunch of people can take it. That's what we call it an appropriability failure, is that externality, meaning your idea doesn't get used up, so any of us can use it. We'll cut into your profit margins. So the rate of return you see is far below what the society as a whole could get. So that's it. Then you want to subsidize R&D, or you want to have patents or tax write-offs or something like that, that brings the private rate of return to that R&D closer to the social rate of return. So that's what we do. That's the standard concern in the advanced countries. What I was just describing, though, is that in the developing countries, we need to think not only about barriers to accumulating knowledge capital, let's say to innovating, we have to think about all the barriers to accumulating all of the complementary factors, physical capital, labor. So if I have a lousy education system, it doesn't matter if I get a high-tech firm because there won't be any workers to staff it. So you have to think about all of these dimensions when you think about what we call the national innovation system, right? The system of institutions and people that, you know, generate new ideas or implement, or not even generate, or identify new ideas and bring them to a country. It's a much more complex problem. You have to think about a lot of different markets that aren't working. Education markets, credit markets, you know, your trade regime, all that stuff matters. And that is a task that gets harder and harder, making sure all those things work, exactly as you get further from the frontier, because we find that government capacity to actually resolve issues gets weaker and weaker.
But the returns are significantly higher if they manage to get it done.
Right. But these other problems start getting larger and larger. And at some point, we find the curve bends over, right? And so for very poor countries, the rates of return to R&D could potentially be negative. How could they be negative? Because instead of investing in R&D, you should be investing in basic education. So it's exactly that kind of horse race. Yes, as I get further, there are greater opportunities. But on the other hand, I'm less capable of actually taking advantage of them that causes this bend over of the returns curve. So exactly, the challenge is to find ways for governments with limited bandwidth, you know, with let's be honest about our capabilities, to actually move the innovation agenda forward in, you know, meaningful ways.
So do you think that there's just a lack of awareness among policymakers in developing countries? Do you think that if they were more aware of this lost opportunity, that they'd be putting more effort towards building policy that will work in the long run?
I think there's an awareness sort of abstractly that this is important, but it happens in a funny way, which is it tends to say, oh, yes, artificial intelligence, we have to be there, we need to be the Internet of Things. Okay, some countries definitely need to be there, and maybe there are some countries that can leapfrog from wherever they are to get there, but it's important to remember, for instance, that there are a lot of things that countries can do, that firms can do, that are much less, let's call it sexy, just making my firm work better. And you can get huge returns without doing anything shiny. There's a very important study in India by Nick Bloom and David McKenzie and other associates, where they took 20 textile firms and they divided them into two groups. And in one of them, they had Accenture Consulting come in and benchmark them. And after 1 year, they saw improvements in productivity of 11%, which could pay for the entire program. There was no introducing of AI or anything. It was just, okay, let's organize how your raw materials are stored. Do you have good records of what each person is producing? So when there's a defect, I can find out which worker or which manager is responsible, and I can go deal with it. Those things, they sound basic, but most of the firms in our developing countries don't have those capabilities well established. So I think there's a little bit of a twisting of distortion of the agenda towards these hot areas when there are huge returns to have by much more prosaic forms of innovation.
That was William Maloney, Chief Economist for Equitable Growth, Finance and Institutions in the World Bank Group, and co-author of The Innovation Paradox, Developing Country Capabilities and the Unrealized Promise of Technological Catch-Up, published by the World Bank. If you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. And you can also now follow us on Twitter at IMF Podcast.